Ho, ho, ho! Welcome, everybody, to the Who Shot Ya Christmas Special!
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise the name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Happy holidays, everybody! Welcome to Who Shot Ya, our Christmas episode!
Woo!
Yes! Joining me today, I mean, the happiest person on the planet, I'll have to say, film reviews editor at The Wrap, el mero mero de Navidad. This is your day, bro!
Welcome to my world,
this
everybody.
This is it! Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what possibly cannot be good with you? I mean, like, everything is good.
Everything is pepperminty and cocoa-y. That's actually my what's good is, if you have not checked out the Milano slices, it's half a Milano cookie. So it's the cookie with the chocolate and then crushed peppermint on top.
Ooh.
Yeah.
My man.
Get to know them.
That's what's up. I will. I'll let them know my name is Ricky. What are you doing for Christmas?
Staying in town. Okay. Dave and I are we make dinner on the 24th, and then we have somebody else who cooks on the 25th, and so we go there and get fed.
Oh, nice, fantastic, excellent. And to my left here, she has just the biggest Christmas smile that you dare I say terrifying,
beaming, one would say.
Host of the Switchblade Sisters podcast, it is April Wolf. April, what is good with you?
What's good is me, is it? Yeah. By the time that you hear this, I will be in Michigan making snowmen. And so I'm real excited because I get to be with my family back home. Woo. Which means that we're going to get wasted on Christmas Eve, which is our annual family tradition. Mm-hmm. And we always designate a new, like, tropical cocktail that we're going to have that we all drink that makes us all sick. It's like, is like my whole family is like, we do things that are painful to us constantly and then laugh about it. Like, that's our MO.
And who doesn't want a frozen drink in December in Michigan?
I mean, honestly, it's one of those things where my family just, like, they wear, like, tank tops and they turn up the heat in the house. And they're just like, we're in a tropical climate. No one can convince us otherwise. And yeah, that's Christmas Eve. We don't do anything on Christmas except for nurse a hangover with some Bloody Marys.
Sure.
And eat some leftover shrimp and watch some bad TV.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what the whole
traditions
baby
Jesus, matter.
Yeah, this is why baby Jesus, the sins and the nativity
and all
that.
Yeah,
all
he
that.
Was born. Yes. Yeah, he was born for my shrimp.
Ricardo, what's good?
Oh, thank you, sir. What's good? You know, I'm looking forward to Christmas this year. Christmas is I guess I don't know, bittersweet is the right word, but. You know, I don't live, you know, my family's back in Chicago. I won't be traveling back to Chicago this year, but I'm looking forward to spending Christmas with my girl and opening presents together. And, yeah, usually like the 24th, the same as your family, April. The 24th is like the big day of like everybody getting together.
Let's Noche get buena.
Yes. Let's get crunk. And then we actually open our presents at midnight. On the 24th. Do you do that? Did you ever do that?
We do that for a part of my family. Like, my immediate family will break off from the aunt, uncle, and cousins, and grandma and grandpa, and then we go home when we're already drunk, and we keep drinking, and then we open up our presents at, like, midnight.
Oh, nice.
So,
yes.
Similar.
Yeah. So then on Christmas, what we do is just, like, watch movies, like, all day. Usually my brothers and I would, like, pick a trilogy of, you know, whatever we had, you know, like, or whatever, usually like whatever we could rent from the video store. I was going to say whatever's on cable, but no, this was like back when we were just going to the video store. So we'd rent like the Star Wars trilogy or what have you and spend the day doing that. And I think, you know, when Christmas Day comes along, I'll probably do that. Probably me and my lady watching movies all day. And it's going to be fun. See, Alonzo, I don't hate Christmas.
I never said you did.
Right. Oh, no. He was talking about it the other day.
So.
He was like,
sworn.
Why does Ricky hate Christmas?
I heard that, though. I could have sworn I heard that.
You know what's really fun to do in Los Angeles on Christmas? Parallel Park.
Oh, yeah. Just slide right
just
in.
Yeah. Just like the streets are empty.
Right? Or it's film like, a movie like Night of the Comet.
Yeah. Suddenly you are Will Smith in I Am Legend. It's like no one's around and it's, driving's the best.
On this episode, though, we are going to be talking about what has become a controversial Christmas movie. I don't necessarily think it is because I'm a fan of it. We're going to be talking about Love Actually, y'all. And instead of giving Alonzo un minuto to talk Hallmark Christmas films, we've got one third of the podcasting team behind the hit show Deck the Hallmark. Specifically, we've got what he is known as the Grinch of the bunch, I'm told, Dan Thompson. And as always, we will have our staff picks. But first, instead, usually I say, now we're going to do a round of It a Dick, short for It is Important, Do I Care? We're not doing that, y'all. It is the Christmas episode. We are going to have ourselves a white elephant gift exchange. Each of us has brought in a wrap gift under $10.
I don't wrap presents.
What's yours wrapped in?
It's such a waste of paper.
Yours is like wrapped in duct tape or some shit.
Yeah. No, no, mine.
Walk me
mine
through
is
your process.
Mine is in a plastic bag.
You have tied a festive knot at the top.
I tied a knot. Yes. In a black plastic bag.
There's either a gift in there or a King Cobra 40. I can't tell.
Wouldn't you like to know?
I'm hoping it's a King Cobra 40.
Not both.
April Alonzo and producer Casey will be joining us in on this. We've each brought a gift to the studio, and we will draw numbers to see who gets to start. The first person to select a gift gets to steal less. Also, a gift can only be stolen twice. These white elephant gifts rules are very confusing.
Very
but do you guys get it?
I always get confused. I've never played it sober, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, great. We'll crack open that King Cobra 40. Yo, let's do this right.
All right. Who's got numbers?
Let's get numbers.
I have the numbers. I'll bring them in.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Casey. Casey's coming into the studio, ladies and gentlemen.
That's mystery producer Casey, for those who don't know his voice.
Here we go. We are drawing numbers right now. We are drawing numbers from the magical Christmas cup.
I'm a three.
I am a number four. Does that mean Casey's going first?
I think Casey's going first.
Rigged.
Well. Okay, well, since I got number one, I'll be drawing first, and I'll need somebody to open the Christmas present for me because I'm outside the
studio. We're like robot arms. We're like dismantling the bomb.
Yes. Like those, the presents are preemies and
All the presents are laid out in front of us in the middle of the room here.
I would like to open April's the present April bomb.
Yeah, you do.
Yes. Can somebody open that up for me?
I'll get that. Yep.
Casey said to get only gifts that only you would get for someone that only like come from you specifically. So this is very much.
Casey, do you have a process in how you like gifts opened? Would you like me to carefully tear this open?
No, you
like,
can tear that right open.
Yeah, rip
he's
going to
use that plastic bag again later.
Christmas.
Votives.
I got you Mexican spiritual candles. One is to give you luck and money, and the other
one here.
The other one is hilarious because it is you light it and chant the prayer on the back, and it will make sure that the person that you broke up with will never ever find love.
Yes, I will read these. I'll read this to you in English.
I like these candles.
In English, it says your lover will hate you, and that translates to Spanish to te odiará tu amante. I like
that
one.
You already got married this year, which I'm sure is rubbing it in the nose of whatever exes you've got floating around
like,
out there.
One more. Let's make her life a living hell.
Two lovely candles. One is black. And then the other one is just multicolored. It's multicolored, like a rainbow.
You know, it's for fortune.
Lovely.
You know, dinero.
This is lovely. Sí. Ven dinero. Success. Éxito. Bendición de dinero.
Yeah, And there's you know, instructions on the back of what you're supposed to say. But
of course. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's number two? Who would
I'm number two.
Oh, okay.
All right.
So, April, you can either steal mine, which I don't think you'll do, but or you can open up a new one.
I'm not gonna steal.
Okay.
I'm going to open something up.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm going to open up some Alonzo's.
Okay.
Ooh, nice.
I wrapped in my, with Charlie Brown Christmas paper.
Ooh.
Paint a word picture for you people.
Oh, yeah. It's red and white, and it's pretty all over.
Have we talked about Donny Hathaway's This Christmas, that being the greatest Christmas song of all time?
Oh.
I believe it's the greatest Christmas
song
of all
time. I think we've talked about it on every episode where we've done the Christmas Minute. I am, oh, the
you're also from Chicago.
I'm a new
yeah.
convert to Stevie Wonder's Someday at Christmas Time.
Which oh, is that's fantastic.
Ooh, look
fantastic.
At this.
Damn.
It is a Peanuts Whitman sampler.
Uh-huh.
It's assorted chocolates.
Yes.
And you can reuse the metal box for all your sewing notions. That's what my mom would always do with those.
Say, thanks, Mom.
All my sewing notions are in a shoebox, so maybe I would like to.
Yeah, they get an upgrade.
Yeah.
All right.
So you're number three.
I'm number three. I'll have the large object in the brown craft paper, I guess.
Okay.
Someone could hand that to me.
There's one. It looks like
it came from like an old school butcher shop.
Yeah, exactly. There might be just a
ground round. My favorites.
The round is being opened.
What is it? What is it?
Oh.
Shin Black Noodle Soup Family Pack.
Ooh, I'm familiar with what this
Four
product
packages
is.
Packages of ramen.
Yes.
It's very good ramen. It's Yum. Korean ramen, and it's very spicy and very tasty.
Yes.
Spicy pot-au-feu flavor.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Yum.
On the show that I work on at Tosh.0, one of the people that we had on as our celebrity profiles, he is a mukbang eater. And he has like a mukbang channel, and what that is they just eat huge amounts of food, and they just kind of like talk to the camera, and you're almost like having dinner with this person, but you're watching them. Yeah.
Oh, God.
It is a community, bro, and it is huge.
Because there are so many people who are so horrified by like, Dave ate a potato chip on Linoleum Knife once, and I think we lost listeners because they were just like, oh,
This is for people who love it. It's like that same kind of like ASMR crowd, except like with food, and that's where I learned about those specific noodles there, which do
All
look
right.
delicious.
Ricky, you are number four, so you could steal my family pack of noodles, or the Whitman sampler, or the Santeria candles, or unwrap one of these presents that are still here on the floor.
You know, I see something wrapped in purple there, and I just feel like I have to do that due to my allegiance. Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's open this purple mug up. What's going on here? This is a pot stand. Okay. It's a there's Asian
it's
writing on it.
It's a donut trivet.
Is that what's going on? I mean, I don't know what this is, but it's adorable.
It's a thing. You don't.
What do I do with this?
You take your mac and cheese out of the oven. You don't want to put it directly on your wooden kitchen table and leave a burn mark. You put it on the pad.
Okay. All right.
Or if you're like me and you make mac and cheese in the pot and you don't want to put it into a bowl and you just want to eat out of the pot, then you put that underneath and you hold it and you can eat out of the pot because it's still hot.
You put the trivet on your knees. Yeah, we've all been there, April.
Yeah. Or my husband does it with ice cream because his hand gets too cold to hold it. So, you know.
Is he a Michigander?
Yes.
You right, confuse me constantly. So now we've circled back to our number one, Casey.
To Casey here.
So now, Casey, do you get to steal something? Do you get to open one of these remaining presents?
Yeah, what do you do now?
What would you
I don't know exactly the rules, but I'm going to open up another present because...
Okay. You don't like Santeria?
Because that's good radio.
Yes, it's good radio.
You don't practice Santeria. You ain't got no crystal balls.
There it is.
Sorry.
I want to open up Ricky's present.
Ooh, yes, with festive holiday penguins.
This is the
on
only
it.
One where I'm like, oh, this is definitely like a DVD.
What are you talking about? How dare you? Just immediately.
I mean, just because it's shaped like a DVD.
Yes,
does not
yes.
mean, oh, absolutely. It's a DVD.
Whoa, what? Your boy is on brand. Come on now. But what
this
a
This is
DVD.
The deluxe edition of Set It Off.
Damn.
That is pretty good. That
Damn.
Is pretty good.
Set It Off. The deluxe edition new, DVD.
New featurette.
Read those off.
Setting It Straight, colon, making Set It Off.
Boom.
Ray J, Let It Go music video.
Whoa.
Theatrical trailer.
Bam. I mean, come on now. Set It Off, though.
Animated menus, I bet, probably.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll go through again, and you can either steal... Or take or exchange yours.
Also, there's one unwrapped present.
Yes.
So it's like,
I like the mystery present.
And if you unwrap that one, you're stuck with that one.
Do you keep the $10 that Carol Merrill has given you, or do you go into what's behind door number two? April, you're up next.
You're next.
I think I'm going to keep these because I think that my husband's really going to be happy with me. And I just like want to score points with him. I can be a difficult person and whatever I can do to be like, you love me still, right?
I don't know that I want to swap my ramen for the small pink package, even though, given that it's small, it means it's probably kind of awesome.
I'll watch.
But I think I'm gonna hang on to my ramen.
You're gonna hold on to
Ricky,
the ramen?
Hot pad?
Man.
You don't need a trivet? Do you need a trivet?
I don't need a trivet? But sometimes life just isn't fair, y'all. It just isn't. So I'm going to take April's gift if I can.
What?
Yeah.
Her husband's going to be unhappy. Yeah.
I'm
going
to have to, like, buy some for him myself.
You shouldn't have said all those things. I wouldn't have, as soon as you were like, oh, my husband's going to love us, I was like, well, he's never going to see it.
No. I'm going to text him right now. I got my phone on me. Did you know, like, here's Ricky with the present that I was getting for you.
All right. So, okay. April, then, do you want to keep the trivet or do you want to go for the pink box?
I have a lot of trivets, so I think I'm going to go for whatever the pink box is.
All right.
Okay, all right. So this is like a red. Oh, yeah. This, no, this is definitely perfect for me. Oh,
okay.
You asshole.
It looks like spam from here. Is that spam?
Is it spam?
I got Korean lunch meat.
Korean spam.
For the vegetarian. All right.
But you know what? That is a really awesome label, so that's going to look great in your kitchen while you never open it.
Exactly. That's like one of those cool like Art Deco
Juan
things.
Brand.
It's like an element of decor.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Retro, fancy.
That is super rad looking.
I like it when
just don't eat it.
It's like it's like a pretty small can, and yet it says that there are 6 servings per container. Mm. And it's like, oh, calories, 160 per serving. But I'm like, y'all, you're just trying to pretend that it's not like 900 calories.
You're
like
for 1,000
calories
in
like
a
single thing. Yeah.
All right, we did it, y'all. We did it.
Merry
we
Christmas,
just did
everybody.
Christmas there. Merry Christmas. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we will be talking Love Actually.
Welcome back to WKEP at Night. Up next, looks like we've got a PSA from local forest ranger Duck Newton.
Do I start now? Or
yeah, and lean in, Duck.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, I wanted to address the unfortunate situation that... Okay, listen. Two people, good people that I and a lot of y'all have known our whole lives are dead. Torn to shreds by...
A savage, bloodthirsty beast that defies human comprehension. If you'd like to know more, stop by the Cryptonomica, Kepler's premier museum of the macabre, just off Highway 20.
Come on. We just wanted to warn y'all, to beg you. If you see one of those things out in the forest, don't fight. Don't scream. Run. Run as far as you can.
Doc, it's almost midnight. Listen, folks, if you see anything, please go to thelamplighter.org and let us know. And get behind a locked door tonight.
Anything else we need to... They're leaving. Okay, well, that's thelamplighter.org, and stay safe out there, Kepler.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
April Wolf.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today, we are talking about Love Actually. Alonzo or April, or both of you, since this is a movie that is about a group of people, can you give us a quick synopsis of the film?
What if we did, like, every single sentence we trade off?
Fair enough.
Okay, you do yours first.
All right. Hugh Grant is the new prime minister, and he falls in love with the plus-size girl who brings the tea.
Alan Rickman is married to Emma Thompson, and they're having some marital problems. They've got some kids, and he has a hots for a young person in his office.
Liam Neeson is a sad widow who is determined to teach his late wife's son how to win over the girl of his dreams.
Colin Firth is trying to write a book, and he goes away to the country, and he hires a... Where is she from?
Portuguese.
She's Portuguese.
Yeah, he hires a Portuguese servant, essentially, to help him take care of the house while he's on this writing retreat.
Bill Nye is a washed-up pop star who wants to get the elusive Christmas number one in the UK by recording a terrible cover of the Troggs' Love Is All Around, but Hewed to Christmas.
And then there's the guy who he wants to go to America, because American women love British accents, and he's not necessarily a looker in Britain, but he can get, he can pull a little in America.
Andrew Lincoln from Walking Dead seems to be way too into his best friend Chiwetel Ejiofor and not so into Ejiofor's new wife, Keira Knightley. Or is he?
Is there anything else?
There's Laura Linney and Rodrigo Santoro.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
And then there's Martin Freeman and the other, the naked girl.
Yeah, there's so many. The movie stand-ins. Yes. I forgot. That's one of my favorites.
And Rowan Atkinson.
And
oh, man, this is such an all-star cast. Yeah.
It is. It is. I mean, what are our thoughts on Love Actually here? There's, as I've said before, it's taken on a little bit of controversy.
Yeah,
is that real controversy? I mean, I know it's jokey controversy, but is it something that's
like if Lindy West wrote a great piece about how she fucking hates Love Actually, and this is one of those things where like I read the people who love it and I read the people who hate it, and I go, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Like everything that people like about this movie, I like about this movie. I like the shininess of it. Like I love the sort of bougie British London glitz of Christmas, you know. Mm-hmm. And I love a Richard Curtis snappy one-liner and like somebody saying the most awkward thing imaginable at the worst possible moment and that being funny. And I
which gift should we give to the kids? One that looks like a transvestite or the one that looks like a prostitute?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I there's so much about that kind of thing. You know, I love these actors. I love a lot of the moments that they have. And then at the same time, it's like, yeah, this is a movie about white dudes who are falling in love with their employees.
It really is.
And so it's like, that's problematic. And it's way more problematic now than it was when this movie opened 15 years ago, you know?
Yeah. It's weird. I was watching and thinking about that, and it's weird how far we've gone from like, oh yeah, no, you know, office romances, that's something that's happened. And now it's like, you don't really want to have an office romance because you want to keep that relationship separate because you don't want to make the other person feel uncomfortable and vice versa. I fucking love this movie. I hadn't seen it in a minute and I was like, oh, this is fun. And it's funny as hell. Hugh Grant, I think, is great in it as the prime minister. I just think that's fucking brilliant casting as well. Like, at the time that this came out, like, where was Hugh Grant in his Hugh Grantness? Was it post? We caught him with a lady.
It was way after that.
So this is kind of like redeemed.
In
Hugh
a way,
Grant,
yeah.
Right?
And it was reteaming him with, you know, Curtis had, this was Curtis's first film as a director, but he wrote Four Weddings and a Funeral,
yes,
which of course was
movie.
Which was Grant's big breakthrough. And this has a lot of the same appeal as Four Weddings. It even sort of repeats some of the same jokes in a way. But that sort of like British toffs with a good sense of humor who are pleasant to look at in interesting locations kind of movie, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, obviously his stuff goes way back to like Blackadder, so that's the Rowan Atkinson connection, and you know, The Tall Guy, so that's Emma Thompson. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of these are people that he's worked with before.
This is like a British Marvel superhero cast.
It is the Love Actually universe that
exactly. And Emma Thompson gets to be in Love Actually and Harry Potter, you know. But so I mean, there's a lot that's really charming about this film. And, you know, there are, like, Dave and I have a joke now, it's not Christmas until Emma Thompson cries. You know? and it's like, that is a moment of genuine feeling in this movie that doesn't have a ton of them. I mean, this is a pretty glib movie about romance. And, but, you know, that glibness can be appealing when the way that Richard Curtis does it, you know, because it's all, everybody's zippy and got funny things to say.
Yeah, like Emma Thompson is so good in this movie.
She's great. I like when it takes the little moments of, you know, her crying by herself in that bedroom. The Laura Linney storyline with her brother, when it's just like, oh, this is not holiday fun. This is not holiday cheer. Yeah. I like that
blonde women weeping in this movie.
Yes, yeah. I think if the whole movie would have been just all zingers and one-liners, and like, then I'd have been like, I'm not really into this. But the fact that we're able to get like a little bit of,
and it also does kind of like, I think they're trying to illustrate different kinds of love. I mean, they're all heterosexual, but mm-hmm. you know, like the fact the love that that Laura Linney has for her brother and the choices that she makes because of it, or the love that Bill Nighy has for his manager in a platonic mm-hmm. way, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, it's not just boy meets girl all the time. But yeah, there is that whole weird thing of like it, that it didn't occur to anybody that like, literally, the prime minister and the coffee lady, the author and the housekeeper, mm-hmm. the you know, whatever it is that Alan Rickman does,
yeah,
and his
second,
it's some sort of like Habitat for Humanity kind of nonprofit something.
Sure,
I'm
sure.
Never clear on it. And the secretary, Bill Nighy, and the long suffering manager, you know, and so that just kind of skews it a lot in a weird way that I think as the years pass and as we look at work relationships and how women in the workplace have suffered at the hands of bosses who thought they could take liberties or have, you know, introduce feelings into a situation that was supposed to be professional. You know, this movie looks a little more clunky and, you know, and dated mm-hmm. in a way.
Well, it's, mm-hmm. I mean, as we've definitely been having this come to Jesus moment with a lot of rom-coms that were made, you know, previous years, because most of them are very problematic, and
sure.
you know they're not so great for
women. This is 15 years ago. This is
2003. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So, but I think the reason that this one tends to stand out to people is because there's more than one problematic romance. There's like a lot of them. We're like, how can we fit as many problematic romances in? So it's just like, you know, we can separate them out and be like, yeah, this movie is definitely really sexist, or like, no, like that's actually sexual harassment. Why would you, you know, like say anything? We can talk about that. Mm-hmm. But this one is just like six of them that are like, no. So it's harder to you know, let it slide.
How much of it is the question? How much of it is also like a cultural thing as well? I was surprised how much jokes there are about Hugh Grant's is she his secretary?
She's the coffee lady.
About her being like heavy and fat, and like they just really drive that home. It's like the second to last line in the movie.
She's just like an average size, beautiful woman.
Yeah, right. I remember seeing it the first time and looking around like, what the fuck are they talking about? That woman is fine. She's gorgeous. Nowhere.
And interestingly, Emma Thompson is wearing, I mean, it's not a fat suit per se, but she is padded out to basically look more sort of like housewifely and less actressy, I guess. Mm.
But the question I was trying to get at is like, is there like a different culture in Britain and London in Europe where it's easier for them to get away with these things? Did they have the same conversation? Are they having the same conversation now?
Good question. I don't know, but I suspect that for American audiences, we probably forgive a lot when it's delivered in a charming British accent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I saw this with a lot of old white people in the theater when it first came out, and I mean, they were laughing like I was at a deaf comedy jam show. They were like, no, he didn't just dance to Jump by the Pointer Sisters. No, he did it.
Here's a fun fact. I saw this movie on a plane in the last couple of years. Two things that do not make it into the airplane version.
What?
One, the whole subplot about the naked people, about the stand-ins on the movie set.
Martin Freeman is cut.
Martin Freeman completely absent from the film. But he still shows up at the very end of the airport. You're like, who are you? Also, the speech at the beginning where Hugh Grant talks about 9/11, not in the airplane version.
Right? Weird.
Not in the airplane version.
Weird that didn't make it.
Yeah,
for,
and I looked and I couldn't find United 93 anywhere on the airplane menu.
That's so weird. I have to say, I do think that my favorite, if we're going to pick out like what our favorite couples are, mm-hmm. I think that my favorite ones to watch are, even though I generally forget it's in the movie, it is the one with Martin Freeman, because I think that it's like the one that seems to have like a great deal of respect.
Yes.
You know, it's just mm-hmm. like two people, like despite the fact that they're nude, you know, just being like, oh yeah, you know, that was great. But, and like,
they're very deferential to each other.
Yeah, they are. They have like just respect, and they're just like they have to be more like hyper respectful of each other because they're nude, mm-hmm. and so it's just this genteel kind of like them getting to know each other.
Yeah,
which is just like, is this what Naked and Afraid is, or like naked dating? Like probably not. I like that one, and then I think the Emma Thompson one with Alan Rickman. Those two I think are my favorites.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite couples storyline on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I love the whole Emma Thompson thing. I love the appearances of Rowan Atkinson. Apparently,
funny.
In an early draft, like his character was supposed to be an angel, but they decided to drop that, which is probably for the best. But that whole scene with Alan Rickman is such a great, like, you could just, that scene you can pull out of the movie as like a sketch, and without having seen anything before or anything after it, just like it captures such a great sort of weird tension. It's hilariously funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
And I mean, you know, I love, like, Bill Nighy is hilarious.
Yeah. I feel it in my fingers.
Oh, you know, like, whenever, you know, this is a joke that's more for British audiences than American ones, but he's on that TV show, and it's hosted by Ant and Dec, and they hosted Pop Idol in the UK, which is like the show that became American Idol.
Okay.
Which is why we had two hosts originally, and then they got rid of Brian Dunkelman and it became all Seacrest. But anyway, so Ant and Dec, like, that's all they do is they're presenters. And so one of them asks the Bill Nighy character a question, and he responds with, "Well, Ant or Dec." So that's become a running joke in my house. I don't know. Yeah, I just I get seduced by this movie, even though I know what's wrong with it and I know what's super bougie about it. It is this sort of like, it is shot like, if you see, there have been, over the years, the Spice Girls have done a series of TV commercials for this British department store called Tesco, which is sort of like their Target. It's like part grocery store, but part, like, you know, electronics and clothes and, you know, whatever else. Mm-hmm. And they're shot in these just, like, shiny, shiny holiday, you know, glitz. And, you know, the way this movie just glimmers constantly and how the city is so decked out and just everything is lit so festively, you know, I get seduced by that every year, and I want to look at this movie every year, even if I don't always want to listen to this movie or think too hard about what it's actually about.
It does have a very specific look to it. Like, there's times where I almost expected, like, Maria Bamford to, like, come out in the background. Remember when she was doing those, like, Christmas commercials for Target? Like, I kept, like, expecting her to just, like, pop her head out. I like you bringing up your favorite, like, you know, like, love storyline. Is there a least favorite one that you all have? Which is your least favorite?
Colin Firth.
Oh, really? Why that one?
It just feels like he fell in love with his slave or something. Like, she doesn't have, like, a lot of autonomy. They don't speak the same language.
It happens very quick, too.
Yeah,
like, their love is just like, oh.
Yeah, I don't
buy it. It feels weird.
I will forgive that entire storyline just for the line when the little kid says, "I hate Uncle Jamie." I'm willing to let the rest of it go. I have really turned a corner on Andrew Lincoln. Like, the more times I see this movie, the more creepy stalkery he feels.
Oh, yeah.
And his big final thing with the cue cards, which the first time I saw it, I found completely charming. Now it just feels a little creeper.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't, like, if I were in Keira Knightley's character's position, I would just be like, I need to tell my husband, and he has to end his friendship with this man.
Yeah.
Like, this is too much, and I, you know, like, he ruined our wedding video, and he's really creepy, and I'm not sure my husband even knows what's happening. But
I'm very uncomfortable about all of this.
I don't have a favorite, but I love Bill Nighy in this movie. I love the relationship with him and his manager. I just think Bill Nighy is so funny, and him the first scene where he's just, like, doing those, like, snaps in the air to, like, get himself excited to sing the song, and then he keeps messing up the lyrics, and then where that story finally ends up, him coming back to see the manager and he wants to spend Christmas with him. I love that. I love the Liam Neeson relationship with his son, and just kind of like, and I don't know if this is like a British thing, but just like the jokes that he makes with his son. I was like, oh man, you're just talking about having sex with a woman in all the houses, including your kid's bedroom. You're just saying that to your kid. All right, I'm into
Well,
that.
It's technically his stepson, because
that's true.
It's
yes.
The dead wife's son. It's not his. But,
that is true. I think my least favorite might be the Andrew Lincoln one and the Laura Linney one, because
yeah,
that one
just
brother.
Why why can't she take care of the brother and fuck Rodrigo Santoro?
Yeah,
I don't understand.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, you just, you know, give yourself like 10 minutes, handle your business, and then go see your brother.
Yeah,
you
she's
know?
Being punished.
Yeah, it was yeah. very...
The women get punished in this movie a lot.
Yeah, this movie is not super pro-woman, and queers are totally absent, so, you know.
They don't exist in this world.
Man, I told you, it's 2003, man. You guys didn't come along
yeah,
until,
right.
like,
we weren't invented
late
yet.
2006.
There was an additional storyline about the woman who was, like, the principal at Emma Thompson's kid's school, who was a lesbian, and then, like, her partner was dying of cancer or something, but they cut the whole thing out. Yeah.
The lesbian has to have the sad story.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Did y'all ever see In the Loop?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love the part where the super obnoxious character by Peter Capaldi tells the kind of like handsome but stupid up and coming politician, "Shut up, Love Actually."
I mean, this movie has lived on in the culture pretty deeply, which I think is the sign of a successful movie. But outside of Christmas time, it's just like
here's a nugget I dug up when I was writing the book. Tony Blair actually references this movie at one point in a speech because the Hugh Grant character is clearly supposed to be like a Tony Blair stand-in. Mm-hmm. And there's that moment where like he tells off, you know, Billy Bob Thornton, who is basically playing like idiot George W. Bush crossed with handsy Bill Clinton.
Corny Bill Clinton.
Yeah. you know, and so people were like, oh, why can't the real PM, you know, like tell off POTUS in that same way? And so in a speech, I'm digging it up here. Hang on.
Make it up. I'm not adherent to facts.
There we go. Yeah, no, I don't have the quote, but he actually, but there was a speech years later where Tony Blair like referenced the PM that Hugh Grant plays in the movie and how like that doesn't quite jibe with how reality works and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, that's how ingrained this movie became in the culture.
Yeah, and then of course there's like the SNL sketch that became famous where Hillary Clinton takes over for Andrew Lincoln's part.
Oh, yes.
And I still see it memed, you know, where it's like it just says, like, he'll kill us all.
He will kill us all.
All right. So should people screen? Well, actually, you only got one chance. You can only stream this movie, or you can skip it, or you can go buy it at your local Best Buy there. What do you think, Alonzo?
It's on Netflix. Stream it. I mean, maybe read the piece by Lindy West if you've never seen the movie before, and then see the movie. But you know, this is a movie that people have issues with, and I completely respect those issues, and I think they are right. But it also just offers a lot of, you know, Christmassy yummy times.
And don't forget to buy Alonzo's album, Christmas Yummy Times. April, what you think?
Oh yeah, definitely stream it. You should. I mean, you need to know the culture.
Mm. Yeah.
Don't sit out for that. But I understand if you also don't like it, but it's just fucking charming.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, ugh.
Yeah, it really does. It almost makes your fucking TV grin while it's showing the movie to you.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah, really. I watched it this morning and I was all like, oh, I think my day's going to be okay today. We're going to be fine, Ricky. So yeah, I would definitely say stream it. Like Alonzo said, Love Actually is available to watch on Netflix right now, y'all. We are going to take a break right now. When we come back, we are going to be talking to Dan Thompson from the Deck the Hallmark podcast.
Hello, Maximum Fun. I am Oliver Wong, scholar, journalist, DJ, etc.
And I'm Morgan Rold. I'm a music supervisor who loves stilettos. We host Heat Rocks, a music podcast where we talk to influential artists and scholars about the albums that changed their lives. On our most recent episode, we had the chance to talk with none other than R&B legend Macy Gray about one of her favorite albums, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy by Yeezy.
We get deep talking about everything from Kanye's college dropout days all the way up to his most recent shenanigans.
I just think it's weak, and I don't think he has to do that, and I was just disappointed.
So make sure you, dear listener, are subscribed, because you definitely do not want to miss this conversation.
Heat Rocks every Thursday right here on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
April Wolf.
Every week leading up to Christmas, we've given Alonzo an entire minute to tell us about all the Hallmark Christmas movies he's watched that week. And this week, La Semana de Navidad, that is upon us, we are giving Alonzo an entire segment. And because April and I refuse to watch Hallmark Christmas movies...
That's not true!
All right. April does not refuse. Maybe I do. Maybe I do. I do. We've brought Alonzo someone who has... Joining us via Skype from Greensville, South Carolina, is Dan Thompson from the hit podcast Deck the Hallmark. Let us welcome Dan. Dan, how are you, sir?
I am doing great. Thanks so much for having me. And I will say, I want to correct you on one thing. I am watching these movies, but somewhat against my will. And so I don't know how much Alonzo is going to enjoy having me around, but I'm so glad that I'm able to join you guys.
I'm a huge, huge fan of Deck the Hallmark. I've been lucky enough to do a couple of episodes with you guys this year. And, I think you bring a much-needed voice to the conversation. Dan, maybe explain to people who haven't heard the show, what's it about and what role do you play in all this?
Sure. It's basically the podcast everybody's been clamoring for. It's three dudes watch Hallmark movies. And basically
finally.
What we... Yeah, I know. Exactly. Long time overdue. Basically, one of my buddies, Brandon, loves Hallmark Christmas movies, much to my chagrin. He knows that I hate them, and I'm a lover of all things good film, and so he wrote me into this idea where we watch every new Hallmark movie, and then we have a third guy named Panda, and basically he likes the movies. And so the bit is Brandon loves them, Panda likes them, I despise them, and we go through every single Hallmark film. We give a hot take. We talk about moments in the film that just don't make any sense, and we laugh a lot and carry on, and it's really taken off in an unbelievable way. I really thought it would just be a nothing, and we were on Good Morning America last month, so it's been crazy.
Yeah, you guys have skyrocketed. My own theory was just like, well, you're straight guys taking over the work of women and gay men.
That's right.
Which is always a can't miss in the pop culture. Has this really caught you guys by surprise? Because your rise has been meteoric.
Well, it has been so surprising. And I will say Hallmark has been closed off to ethnically diverse people and straight white guys. And so we're glad to break that glass ceiling for at least one group of people. Look, in July, we did a preview episode of sorts. And I said, look, man, this is the first time I've ever watched one of these movies. It really sucks. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this, especially if no one's listening. And literally after the first episode, the lead actor of the movie that we reviewed, he called us and he was like, guys, you're hilarious. Can I come on your show? And it really was that quick. I'm not making this up. It literally was overnight. The next thing you know, we have people clamoring for more episodes, requesting films for us to watch. And by the time we hit our first real episode in November, it was a full-blown success. Southern Living had written about it. I'm just telling you, like, for me to say that I can't believe it would be the understatement of the century. It's been absurd. It just has.
Now, mind you, Hallmark never sleeps. As soon as Christmas is over, we go right into Winterfest, and then it's Valentine's, and
gracious.
Then it's like, I don't know what the hell.
Autumn,
like
harvest, summer of love. Just stop it, for crying out loud.
Like, are you guys going to – is there going to be a moment of radio silence just to regain your sanity and reintroduce yourselves to your families, what do you see ahead?
Well, to take a phrase from you guys, for the longest time, Hallmark movies were not important, nor did I care about them. Now I'm in this enviable position where I have to care. I have told these guys this straight up. I will not watch any Hallmark movies in January. You can take it to the bank. It will not happen. I am a man, for crying out loud. I'm going to take a break if I say I'm going to take a break. Having said that, I'll probably just be Hallmark slave starting in February. I have no idea. I do know that there's been enough response where we're going to have to do something. I tend to lean more to the fact that we watch some of the autumn movies and some of the summer movies, like just trying to do some preview episodes to get used to it. And I would tell you right now, the Christmas ones are a joy compared to the autumn ones. I mean, if you think it's just loosely hanging there as a Christmas movie, try to watch an autumn harvest, you know, Hallmark movie. They are just nonsensical.
So are they just all like about like pumpkin pie?
I was just saying, like,
shit,
pumpkin patches.
It's pumpkins, apple cider, and hay rides. Like that's all they got.
Oh,
everyone has rosy cheeks.
Hay rides. Yeah, it's really bad.
You know, cunning sweaters. Now, you are a by day a high school principal. Has your podcast fame bled into your academic life at all.
Unfortunately, it has. I will say this. When I went to college, my undergrad was history, which is useless, minor in film, which is also fairly useless as a minor. And I looked into film criticism, loved it very much, and then was like, you know what? I really love education. I love the day-to-day interaction with the students. Became a history teacher, went back, got my master's, became a principal, love my job very much. I also coach a basketball team. I'm a busy dude. I tried my best to keep this away, especially from my faculty. And then I can't remember, an article was written like in October sometime. Our local newspaper wrote an article on us, and a couple of my faculty members found out about it, and that was the end of it. It just, no pun intended, it snowballed from there, and it became something. And then, you know, by the time we got on Good Morning America that morning, pretty much every kid in the high school was in front of some sort of screen somewhere to watch me on the TV, which I guess is cool, but simultaneously it's like, you know, I'm supposed to be like a bastion of academia and educational integrity, and I'm skipping school to go to New York to talk to Michael Strahan about like the latest Christmas movie from Hallmark. So not
wait,
exactly.
Do you have a favorite one though yet?
So I do have a favorite one, I guess. They've all been really bad. The exception is Christmas Everlasting, Hallmark's Hall of Fame movie, which is a little bit longer, a little bit bigger budget. It was an all diverse cast this year, which is cool. I'm a white guy, but I'm also a foster and adoptive parent, and I'm the only white guy in my family. My wife's not white. Nobody else is. And so, like, part of the tough part for me was watching these movies and just see it completely just sanitized over and over again, just same color of everything. And so Christmas Everlasting was good because there's some diversity, but it's also good because it's the only one so far where the romantic kind of back and forth is not based upon just a very basic lie, like you know, all of these
there's no fake fiancés.
That's right. All of these movies could be solved with, wait a minute, like, you're not engaged, or wait a minute, you were trying to lose a guy in 10 days, or wait a minute, you're from Alabama, or something. You know, like, there's something that is just dumb that 1 second of honest communication would fix. And Christmas Everlasting, which has Dennis Haysbert, who's the Allstate guy, Tatiana Ali, Ashley Banks from Fresh Prince. It's got some, like, I guess,
Patti LaBelle
in
oh,
it.
Oh, damn. Well,
yeah, that's right. Alonzo Duraldi said she was wearing quite a wig, and that is
actually she is. Some serious bangs.
It's in the credit
sure.
section.
But it has two legitimately earned moments of emotion, which is two more than any of these other films have had so far for me. So that's been my favorite so far.
This is also the movie that posits that somewhere in Wisconsin there is a black lawyer who likes ice fishing.
That's right.
And no black person that I have asked about this has signed off on it. But, you know, it's Hallmark. Well, we'll just go with it.
The other, there's a bunch of crazy parts of that movie. But one is, the town is either called Nielsen or Nelson's Bay, and they say it differently all the time. So some people say it Nielsen and some people say it Nelson. So I'm like, it must be a South North thing. Like, oh, you're from North Nielsen or you're from South Nelson, you know. So between that and all the black people that like ice fishing, I mean, it's quite a movie for sure.
One thing I've noticed among people who have seen enough of these is that they feel like they could write one. Have you crossed that line?
Oh my gosh, it's all the same movie. The big cities are the worst and the small towns. And look, I'm from South Carolina, and the thing that it's tough to say, and I don't say it on our podcast because it's squeaky clean, but I got to be honest, the picture that Hallmark paints of small towns is fairly inaccurate. In my experience, big cities get Christmas right. I mean, like New York, I was just up in New York. We did Good Morning America's Christmas episode. It's gonna air Christmas Day. And like, New York City and Christmas is great. Most small towns are just racist. Like, they're just like, like, they don't have this big cookie crawl and everybody gets along and flip. It's like, that's not the case. Like, I've got some bad news. But in these Hallmark movies, they all write this script of, you really haven't done Christmas, so you've gone back home and met the love of your life that never left the town and is now the janitor at the public school or is chopping wood somewhere. And like, that's the only way that you can actually really find the true meaning of Christmas. And yeah, I could write one tomorrow. Like, it would be so
I think maybe they just sell a program now where you put in the character names and, you know,
that's
like
right.
the kind of cookie, and it just, they go with it.
It's a plug and play. That's right.
Well, listen, Dan, congratulations. You know, you are, no one's asking us to go on Good Morning America, so y'all are clearly doing something right. But congratulations on the success of the show and keeping your sanity from having watched all these movies. Mm-hmm. But thank you for coming on. Have a great holiday. And, you know, I can't wait to see what you guys come up with in 2019.
Oh, my goodness. I can't either. Thanks for having me on, guys. I'm a big fan. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks, man.
Dan, congratulations.
Yeah, congrats. And now it is time for the final Before Christmas. You are close to the finish line, sir, and it is. I can tell you're excited about it. It is time for our final El Mero Mero de Navidad Christmas Minute, where Alonzo tells us in 1 minute all the Hallmark movies he has watched this week. 1 minute, not 1 second more. Casey, for the last time, will you start that timer, please?
Okay, so I still have a few left to go, and you just have to live with that. But entertaining Christmas is basically like, what if we did Christmas in Connecticut, but put Jodie Sweetin in it? And, you know, it's okay, I guess, and she's certainly giving it her best shot. But the whole time I just kept thinking about Barbara Stanwyck, and you don't want me to do that during your Christmas movie. It's not going to work out well for anybody. Meanwhile, over on Miracles of Christmas on the Hallmark Movies and Mysteries, we get Northern Lights of Christmas, which is all about Ashley Williams trying to sell a ranch and get her pilot's license at the same time or something. I don't know. Ashley Williams is trying to fireman's carry this whole movie across the finish line, but she's about the only character that it's remotely even possible to care about. So anyway, Hallmark, too many movies this year, I think. Your emphasis on quantity has really hurt the quality, and I think Lifetime and Freeform are going to fill the gap if you're not careful, so watch your back, Hallmark. Looking forward to those Hanukkah movies in 2019.
Ho, 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 y'all, there it is. It's time for our staff picks, y'all. Every week we ask a panel to tell us about a movie we think y'all should check out, any movie at all. Alonzo,
I'm gonna be all April-y and do a book.
Whoa, I like this. I like a change in format.
We're reading now.
Reading time.
Wait, yes. Is it Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas?
No.
Oh, Jesus.
No. I mean, you should buy it, but no. That's
where's that available at?
It's on Amazon.
Oh,
it's a book and a Kindle.
There you go.
This is one that I think is worth having in your library from year to year. Everybody, you know, okay, look, A Christmas Carol is in the public domain. There are a gajillion different versions of it. You can get it for free, I'm sure, just about anywhere probably. But I would say make the investment and get the annotated Christmas Carol, which features extensive, lengthy annotations by Michael Patrick Hearn. It brings this whole story to a whole other level because, like, you read A Christmas Carol, and of course it's a great story, great work of fiction, totally holds up, but you spend a lot of it kind of bleeping over, I don't know how much money that is, I don't know how much weight that is, I don't know why are they talking about bakeries being open on Sunday? Like, it's very Victorian, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of stuff that's super specific to the era that you're just kind of like, you know, the Bible and Shakespeare that way too. Half the time you're like, I don't know what that means. We're just going to keep reading. This book.
What's mirth?
Yeah, exactly. This book breaks it all down and like explains every single passing thing in the book that Dickens is talking about so that you know what that means and what societal conditions he's referring to and what units of measurement he is talking about. And it makes a huge difference if somebody just is like kind of walking you through this, I think you will enjoy A Christmas Carol on a whole other level. Obviously, it's a great story no matter when you read it or under what conditions, but I really think this annotated version is terrific. I pull it off the shelf every year, and, you know, sometimes I try and read it start to finish, or I'll just pick out sections, but I'm a huge fan. Michael Patrick Hearn does an amazing job on this. So even if you think you already know everything you need to know about A Christmas Carol, pick up his version, his annotated edition. It's gorgeous.
All right. That's what's up. April.
So I'm going to reiterate a staff pick that I had before, which is Deadly Games, which is like a French Home Alone that is more violent and is also amazing. It's almost like an auteur did this really fucked up 1990 movie. I don't, you guys just see it. Deadly Games.
And while Home Alone doesn't feel that dated in terms of like the tech or the haircuts, This French movie could not be more of its moment.
It's nutty. but since I already recommended that one before, I'm gonna recommend another Christmas Carol version, which is a Diva's Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know what it is, but on name alone, I'm all
in. Ricky, you would love it.
It's all you VH1 heads out there may have heard of A Diva's Christmas Carol. It stars Vanessa Williams as Ebony Scrooge, one of the world's most successful pop singers. However, with her cold-hearted soul and nasty attitude, she lacks a great deal of holiday cheer and makes her manager Bob, along with her bandmates, anything but happy. So it's a Christmas Carol, and then she gets visited by her old bandmate who's dead, and is like, "You got to turn your life around. You're greedy." And
then, played by Chili from TLC.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. And then the Ghost of Christmas Past, played by Kathy Griffin, shows Ebony her tragic past. It's like it is VH1.
Do not spoil who the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is, because it is my favorite Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come in any Christmas Carol adaptation.
Is it Patti LaBelle?
I'm not telling you.
All right.
I'm not going to say it. Okay. So all I need you guys to know is that Vanessa Williams is cool. Vanessa Williams gets to sing some stuff. And
yes.
If you were as obsessed with her when you were a kid as I was.
Running back to you.
Oh
yes,
man! That Pocahontas soundtrack too.
Oh, I'm not familiar with a Pocahontas song, or her being on the soundtrack.
Colors of the Wind.
I know.
Oh
running,
my God! I would sing all of it if Disney wouldn't charge us so much money right now.
Running Back to You, Work to Do, and then Save
You've
the Best
gone
for Last.
And save the best for last.
Those are the three I know that I'm like of always, forever, ever. Those are jams.
She's so cool, but A Diva's Christmas Carol.
Okay, all right. I think I might have yelled about this movie on this show before, but because it is a holiday episode, I'm gonna say it again. I watch Black Christmas.
Nice.
And that movie, it's available on Shudder. I've been told to watch this movie because I love Halloween so much. And if you watch, if you watch Black Christmas, you will see where all the influences come from. And I watched it and I went, oh, goddamn, this is Halloween, but it's Christmas.
Yeah.
It really is. There's differences, but there are some. I mean, just
it's good though. Like
very good,
solid,
very
it's
good,
a very good movie. It's not cheesy,
and
it's
that's brilliant.
And that's what I was expecting. I was expecting like some cheesy, schlocky type shit, and I was like, oh, this is like a movie. And the ending is very creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Margot Kidder is fucking great in it. It has kind of like a vibe of. When a Stranger Calls to it as well.
It pioneered that sort of thing.
I was really, really impressed by it.
Heather Wixon, I don't know who she is.
She's a wonderful horror writer here in LA.
Okay. At The Horror Chick, she tweeted, I feel like we don't show enough appreciation for the fact that Bob Clark ended both of his vastly different Christmas movies with essentially the same shot. And she has the final shot of A Christmas Story next to the final shot of Black Christmas. And they're awfully alike. I never connected those dots.
I've never noticed this.
Yes. When I found out after the fact that the guy who directed Black Christmas is the same guy who directed A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ. Relax, everybody.
Someone,
I've never seen
had
a Christmas
traumatic
story.
Thing happen on Christmas to him, and he was like, I've got to exercise these dudes. Him and Shane Black are having, like, meetings together.
I'm sorry. Back up. Did you say you've never seen A Christmas Story?
I have not. I'll see it one day at one point. That being said, I mean, respect to it. I don't.
I envy you getting to see it for the first time. It's not like my favorite, but I like it a lot.
Okay, yeah, I hear great things. And one day when I like kind of knock it off of that pedestal and I can just enjoy it for what it is,
sure,
I will watch it. Ward, hey, next week will be our year-end special. So tune in and listen to that. I'm sure we'll be talking about our favorite movies of the year and the whatnot. If you like what you're hearing, leave us that good review on Apple Podcasts. Y'all, 5-star reviews get a shout out on the show, and we have none this week.
Well, then I'm going to use this moment to say, I'll have Casey put in the show notes, check out on YouTube, even if you don't buy my book, there is a clip reel that my good friend David Kittredge edited together for me of a bunch of the films that are featured in it, and it's a nice, like, 8 to 10 minute jolt of like Christmas awesomeness. So go look at that. And
Word.
I have a Spotify playlist of Christmas music. It's under my name. Super easy to find.
There you go. And you're Alonzo Duralde on Spotify.
Yeah.
There you go. Do that.
Alfonso Durante.
Alfonso Durante. Yes, I prefer. I'm more fan of Alfonso Durante's work.
He's my Wario.
I'm Wario.
Thank you to Dan Thompson from the Deck the Hallmark podcast once again for joining us. That was super fun. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod. Send us an email at WhoShotYaMaximumFun.org. You can leave us a message on the WhoShot line. The number is WSY. 803-1664. You can call in if you have questions, recommendations, compliments, what have you. We are here for you. Alonzo, April, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas
and happy holidays,
and happy
guys.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Casey, Merry Christmas. Feliz Navidad, people. Our senior producer is Laura Switcher. Merry Christmas, Laura. This is a production of MaximumFun.org, and that is what is up, y'all.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, motherfucking ho.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.